It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Pets with belly too, and we're putting it all in a podcast, then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pots and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Welcome everyone to Parks and Recollection. It's yours truly, Robert J. Love. What was the name that Mike sure came up, Rob Bocephius Lowe?
Bocephius. Robert Bocephius Lowe. I think he would introduce you sometimes as.
Robert Bocephius Lowe. And what would your phony name, if it weren't Alan Yang, which it is, and I'm happy for it, what would it be?
Sebastian.
And it's the perfect episode for it. It is Parks and Recollection, and this is the Harvest Festival episode, the legendary Harvest Festival episode. Legendary for so many reasons, which we will get into. So pull up a chair, turn the treadmill down, whatever you're doing, because this is a very special episode.
Yeah, man. Listen carefully. Legends only this episode. Harvest Festival, I mean, classic. It's on a lot of people's top 10, top 5, top 1 lists.
Yep.
Really, really great episode. Season 3, episode 7. The culmination. The finale of the Harvest Festival arc, which began with the first episode, of course, written by Dan Gore, directed by Dean Holland. Original air date, March 17th, 2011. On the day before the Harvest Festival, a local Native American leader places a curse on the event because Leslie refuses to give in to his demands. And curses in quotes, because obviously it's made up and that's not real, but it's the kickoff, the inciting incident to the episode. Notes, number one, no Rob Lowe in this episode, so you can speak freely. He'll return in the next episode, Camping. As you guys have hopefully heard in the last episode, Indianapolis, he broke up with Ann Perkins. He's in Indianapolis, and we don't know if he's coming back to the show, but he is, and he'll return for 70 more episodes, but he's not in this one. Second Nopes note, when Leslie recounts how the town is so superstitious, they burned a traveling magician at the stake for pulling a rabbit out of a hat in 1973, a closer look at the mural reveals that the town also executed the rabbit. It's a very good joke. Zoom in on that, guys. Pause on that. If you're on your laptop, zoom in. It's a very funny, kind of tiny visual joke. The book that Ron is reading at the Harvest Festival is called The Nutmeg of Consolation by Patrick O'Brien, the 14th book of the series from which the film Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World was drawn.
Hang on.
Please, go ahead.
We may have a Ray Donovan moment.
It's absolutely
here.
Ray Donovan. It's exactly what I was going to say. This is why we do the pod together. If you didn't listen to the last episode, we named some shows that are like your uncle's favorite shows, or your aunt or your niece or someone in your life, but they're not your favorite shows. Ford vs. Ferrari was mentioned,
I think you actually have to say
Ford v. Ferrari.
I think
mentioned.
That's the key to that. Yes.
Rizzoli and Isles was mentioned. Anyway, Master and Commander is a great Ray Donovan.
Great
Master
one.
And Commander. Because, like, when was the last time you thought about Master and Commander? Like, it's not a bad movie. It's good, in fact. It's just, it's in that ether. It's in that milieu. So, great call.
Yeah.
A lot of Nopes notes on this one, of course. Big episode. Yeah. Number 4. Due to budget constraints, we didn't have the production build out the entire Harvest Festival and Corn Maze sets. Instead, this is fascinating, we filmed the episode at the annual Halloween Harvest Festival at L.A. Pierce College. So it lined up. Now, was that really the Halloween? I guess it was. It looked hot as hell out there, I got to say. This is Halloween. Man, it looked pretty hot out there.
Well, it's really hot in Los Angeles in October.
Yeah, I
October,
guess you're right.
October is actually, it is the hottest month.
It's super hot.
It is always the hottest month in L.A. Always.
Number five, the episode was filmed out of sequence. It was filmed ninth in the order, though it airs as the seventh. This was so the weather would be cooler when the scenes were shot. Look at that. The notes coinciding with the topic of conversation. Number six, the episode was screened for the media during an NBC press junket in January 2021. Is that right? That's got to be wrong. 2011. Okay. 2011. All right. 2021. Man, guys, got any new shows? You going to just show a Parks and Rec app? Okay. Hey, didn't want to show Keenan?
By the way, the way things are going, that might be true.
Hey, man. Hey, we got a reboot of Parks and Rec. Wait a minute. Yeah. That's just an old episode. Yeah, you caught us. Okay. After reporters got a tour of the Parks and Rec set and were able to pose for photos with a miniature horse who played Lil Sebastian. We're going to go off on Lil Sebastian later.
Oh, yes.
So save your fire. Speaking of Lil Sebastian, this episode is his first appearance. It is also, sadly, his penultimate appearance, second to last appearance. So basically, there's two of him. Side note, he will be a hologram at one point. Spoiler alerts for people who are waiting for him to be a hologram.
He was a hologram before
Tupac?
Tupac.
Was he, or was that written after Tupac? I'm not sure. Was it not inspired by the Tupac hologram? I don't know, actually. I literally just read a piece on Coachella. What year was the Tupac hologram at Coachella? I'm looking it up right now, guys. This is riveting podcasting. It looks like 2012. Tupac, Snoop, Dr. Dre. They could have brought him back for the Super Bowl, to be honest. I wouldn't have been mad at that. Maybe a Biggie hologram, too. Let's get into the synopsis. With the Harvest Festival days away, Leslie surprises everyone by booking Lil Sebastian, a miniature horse and legendary Pawnee celebrity. Everyone is thrilled except Ben, who doesn't understand the fascination. The chief of the local Wampanoag tribe, Ken Hotate, played by Jonathan Joss, visits the parks department and requests his Harvest Festival be moved as it's built upon the site of a Wampanoag massacre. When Leslie explains it's too late, Ken warns them the festival may become cursed, although he privately tells the documentary crew that he knows why people are terrified of curses. So it's pretty much a bit.
Okay, so what you've just described, for me, might be the funniest, like, pound for pound, second for second, minute for minute experience in all of Parks and Recreation.
It's up there.
I am not in it. So here's okay, so I realized, I'm like, why have I not seen? Here's what happened. I'm not in the episode, so I didn't read it. And then when I look back on when it aired, I'm like, why have I not seen it? And realize it aired on my birthday, March 17th, 2011. I was doing other things than watching television. So in prepping for this was the first time I've actually seen.
I love it.
The famous Harvest Festival. And can I just tell you, it surpasses anything that I had heard about it. This episode is sheer genius from beginning to end.
That's great. And I think, you know, Rob always likes the sort of comedy forward episodes. And I think this is not only comedy forward, but it encapsulates and crystallizes and is the essence of so many elements of the show coming together, right? It's not only the hard comedy, it's the group coming together. It's Ben and Leslie. It's the town, right? It's the media. Mm-hmm. It's all of these peripheral tertiary characters who each pop in and get two great lines, one great scene. It really is the apotheosis of all those things coming together. And a little bit of background on Lil Sebastian. I know I mentioned, actually not even related to Lil Sebastian, that my fake middle name would be Sebastian. All of the writers had fake names on the show. I don't know why we did this. My fake name on the show was Sebastian. So like Chelsea Peretti was Kim, I think. Harris Whittles was Lou. I think Aisha was Daisy. I mean, this is insane. I don't know why we did this, but everyone had a fake name, and my fake name was Sebastian. I don't know how that tied in, but I also remember very distinctly the origin of Lil Sebastian the horse. It was because there was it was a real news story, and I actually dug up the emails. I had emails from that time. This is from April 25th, 2010. There's an email I sent to Mike Schur, Dan Gore, Aisha Muhar, Kitty Dipple, Emily Spivey. Subject line, I will click on any link, subject or body, dot, 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 that asks the question, is he the world's smallest horse? And it's a link to a CNN video, and it's called The Smallest Horse in the World. And the end of the email says, his name is Einstein. And the email chain continues. Aisha writes back, terrifying. Katie Dippold writes back, that's a cat, I'll tell them. And then in 2010, I wrote back, I guess I remember this episode, and I said, our tiny horse idea from 8 years ago would later turn into a week-long multi-million-dollar production involving hundreds of extras, a tribute video, rock music, and a giant fireball. What a show. The CNN link still works and includes the phrase, for now, he's just busy being cute. So that is literally emails from that day or around when we were pitching the episode. And that second episode I sent was when we were kind of finishing it, right? So it's 2010, right?
Little yeah. Sebastian has to be out of all of the peripheral things about Parks and Rec and the Parks and Rec universe, has to be the most famous.
It's got to be up there. And it's also like it works with fucking Ben, right? It's Ben's new to the town. It's a great metaphor. It's a kind of a metaphor for him learning the town's weirdness, right?
He's so funny with his whole, it's a little horse. I don't get it. It just makes, it is literally like, it is like a softball pitch right down the middle of the plate of Adam Scott's sweet spot to play that move, that comedy move.
I would also say it is a great use of the mockumentary conceit because he's able to share his true feelings with us, the audience, essentially by talking directly to camera. Otherwise, he doesn't have anyone else in the world to tell that to, you know, because he doesn't have another outsider. You're not in this episode. So he's telling the viewer directly. So I would say that's a good use of the talking heads. Jonathan Joss, who plays Ken Hotate, previously voiced John Redcorn in the animated television series King of the Hill, which was co-created by Parks and Rec co-creator Greg Daniels. And I remember this in the room. Ken Hotate's last name was made up. It's the word Hotate is the Japanese word for scallop. If you ever go to a sushi bar, you'll see Hotate on the menu. It means scallop. And in retrospect, maybe we should have made that up. But whatever, that's what happened.
He has one of the great talking heads. He goes, I know in my experience, Pawnee has taught me that white people like Rachel Ray and are terrified of curses. Is one of my favorite.
It's amazing. And I think there was an alt. If there's one thing I know about white people, it's that they love Matchbox 20 and they're terrified of curses. So that was the other.
By the way,
was the other
it's very much in the vein of, again, yes. Dare I say it, Ray Donovan.
Ray Donovan. This is becoming a real catch-all.
Yes.
And so the other things, a couple notes from this section, basically. Mike Schur said, while writing about this curse, the writing staff wanted it to be the local media that turned it into an issue instead of the citizens of Pawnee because they felt like it would be too cartoonish and unbelievable for the residents to really take the curse seriously. But it's kind of something that the media in the town, which we've seen is pretty silly. You know, we've seen a lot of media figures. We've seen John Calamezzo. We've seen Pert Hapley. We've seen, you know, Crazy Iron the Douche. Like, that's the kind of people who might gin this kind of thing up. And so, you know, look, I think we're looking for external conflict. I think we're looking for challenges for Leslie. And so this curse thing was really more of a PR thing, in essence. It wasn't that they actually believed in the curse. It was more like, oh, it's bad PR and no one will come to the Harvest Festival.
I also like how in season three, we're worried about the citizens of Pawnee, worried about a curse. But in season four, we have a whole episode based on the end of the world and everyone believing that the cult was accurate about the end of the world. So things change.
Thanks. You know what? Television show evolves and changes in lovely ways over the course of the run of the show. We talked to our friend Dan Gore. And he said about the cold open, when everyone meets Lil Sebastian, a big turning point in breaking this story was realizing that everyone, including Ron, loved Lil Sebastian. The moment of giddiness that Ron has in seeing Lil Sebastian is such a fun moment and a wonderful payoff for this unflappable, inscrutable character. It's the first time that you see him get truly nakedly emotional, and it's because he gets to meet this miniature horse. And that seems like that's what you were responding to, Rob, right? It's like, it's the pure unbridled joy of this little tiny mini horse.
And everybody, I mean, like you said, in almost any other iteration of anything you could think of, when you have the gang together, someone is going to have a counter reaction to some other character. You know, usually it would be April.
Yeah.
Right? She'd be the one to be like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And they all love this horse, like every single person. And so did America, as it turns out. That's the, I put Little Sebastian up as the most beloved horse since what? International Velvet? What? Who would it even be?
Seabiscuit?
Yeah.
Mr. Ed?
Secretariat? Mr. Ed? I mean, yeah, whatever, man.
Yeah, these Mr. are
famous.
Mr. Ed.
We're now just playing $10,000 pyramid. Famous yes. horses. or I guess it's Family Feud. Famous horses. Let's go.
Famous horses.
Famous horses. BoJack Horseman?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Jim, question for you. How is your social battery right now? You drained? To be bursting with energy? How you doing?
My battery, Greg, thank you for asking, is pretty full. It's because I've learned over the years, sometimes you got to get help, and I am not afraid to do that.
It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So it's important to figure out what the right amount of socializing for you is and the best way to recharge. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Well, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Yeah, so if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It can be a lifesaver. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, because, you know, sometimes the first match isn't always the best match.
So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/parks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/parks. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Plus, you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, which is awesome, and more than 60 add-ons every week.
The last Factor meal I had was a pork chop. Oh, here's the thing about pork chops. I want it tender. I want it juicy. And that is what Factor gave me. Honest to God, it was amazing. And all I had to do was peel off the top and pop it in the oven a couple of minutes. And the smell hits you before you ever taste it. It fills the entire kitchen. And then you peel and you eat. And it is so good.
Head to factormeals.com/parksandrex50 and use code parksandrex50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code parksandrex50 at factormeals.com/parksandrex50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Anne works at the Harvest Festival first aid tent, where she confides in Donna that she has not taken the breakup with Chris well. Man, you ruined her, Chris. April tells Annie that she loves him, but grows angry when he replies, "Dude, shut up. That is awesome sauce." Legendary moment. Joan Calametto arrives to report on the festival and is determined to find a negative story, although she does show excitement over Little Sebastian. She loves him, too. She initially fails to find a scandal, but then overhears Leslie and Ben discussing the curse. It becomes the focus of her story, especially after Tom tells Leslie that Little Sebastian escaped his pen. Tom blames Jerry, although it was entirely Tom's fault.
So I'm a sucker for a horse escaping its pen stories. One of my favorite songs ever is we should put Fair Usage. We can probably play it in here. What's the song about the famous 70s yacht rock classic by Firefall? Wildfire. The pony she named Wildfire busted down his stall in a blizzard. He was lost. And the horse dies. It's a very sad song. Was a number one hit. One of my favorites.
That's super sad.
Very reminiscent of this Little Sebastian story in this episode.
I mean, thank God that doesn't happen, right? Thank God that doesn't happen. It's also making use of the Jerry game in a very funny way. Like, what's Tom doing when is he on the phone or something? What is he doing when Little Sebastian escapes?
He's going to talk about the Snake Hole Lounge.
Oh, he's promoting the Snake Hole Lounge, right? And he has that. So Little Sebastian has that the kind of jacket on too, right? What do they call it when the horse is wearing it? I'm just calling it a horse jacket, but I remember being on set for part of this too, because I remember when Little Sebastian came down to the Parks and Rec office, which obviously is a soundstage on the CBS Radford lot in Studio City. But the writers went down, and I have like photos with Little Sebastian. It's a time capsule photo. I'm like, I remember the outfit. I was wearing white Vans, and I was like, yeah, this is it. But I remember being on set for this a little bit. One of the Harvest Festival booths features Pawnee celebrity Aunt Tilda, the fictional aunt of basketball player Larry Bird. I remember Joan Calamouts was very excited. You got Tilda? That's a great joke. And Ron sits on a launcher. We talked about this. This is the Master and Commander book. I feel like we talked about Ron liking Master and Commander like a lot. I think Nick actually loves this series, if I'm not mistaken. It's also, there's a little Easter egg. It's on the poster for the Pyramid of Greatness. Besides all the real ones like honor and dignity and whatever, freedom. One of them is old wooden sailing ships. So this is all in character for Ron. Course. Look, it's also the awesome sauce. This is weird. Maybe this was a blind spot for me, but I didn't really know the phrase awesome sauce when it came up in the writer's room. Is this a common, I guess 10 years ago, was this a common phrase? Because it got pitched in the writer's room as if everyone knew that phrase. I guess it's a phrase for kids or something.
There's nothing I hate more than phrases that pop up and all of a sudden everybody is saying them like it's been going on since the beginning of time.
I was shaken. I didn't know what this was.
It's Strong Bad, the character from Homestar Runner, which was an animated short series by brothers Mike and Matt Chapman in the early 2000s.
Homestar Runner? That's a deep pull, man.
It sounds like I just described a fever dream again.
I like when we come up with categories of things, like, you know, like we did with the Ray Donovans for specific types of movies. We need to do it for phrases, because right under awesome sauce for me would be amazeballs.
Yeah, that stuff.
And I don't like
crazy,
any
man.
Of that stuff. Get out of here with amazeballs, awesome sauce, and get out. All of it.
I feel like I think there's a show called Workaholics that was on Comedy Central, and I think in their writers' room, Preacher was their writers' room. They had a whiteboard where it was like every like hack comedy phrase. It's adjacent to this. It's not like a hack. I'm not saying awesome sauce is a hack phrase because it's not really a joke.
Right.
But on this board, it was hack stuff. It was the cliched stuff, like, you know, that went well, like that kind of stuff. Like,
yes.
Check please. Like that kind of, it's
that's
like,
gonna
oh,
hurt.
Yeah, that's gotta hurt. I'm okay. Like someone gets hit by something. It's in the trailer. I'm okay. Like that kind of shit.
Yes,
like,
yes. You're
like another thing, by the way, this is in that category that Harris Whittle specifically talked about, was in a movie trailer when somebody was about to say a curse word, like, oh my God, holy. And then they cut out. And then he's like, he once tweeted, like, I love when this happens in a movie when someone's about to say a curse word. Gotta watch the movie, see if they say the word. Like, it's like, what are we doing here? Like, come on, man. This is not funny or interesting. Anyway, apologies to movie trailer cutters.
And, you know, the ultimate of all of them would be the needle scratch.
Yes, that's needle scratch.
The worst,
and that's been going on for decades. They're still doing it.
They're still doing it. It's the worst thing. It's the worst. It's a war crime.
Just a little note out to writers, creators, directors, whoever. Try to avoid that shit. Try to avoid it in your writing, because it's painful.
What about promo departments?
Departments.
If you're listening, if you work in a promo department, if you're cutting movie trailers, I'm begging you, don't do anymore. I can't wait to see. Wait, what's going over there? Needle slip, drop, scratch. Yuck.
You would think they would stop doing it. I mean, it's 2022. We're way back. Like, a lot of shit has happened. Like, can we stop using these old cliches and tropes in movie trailers? It's all I ask.
That's all we ask.
All right. Synopsis continues. The Pawnee media swarms the festival to cover the curse, endangering its opening the next day with a bad press, with one reporter likening Ben's past as a failed teen mayor with a curse. Now believing himself to be the curse, Ben leaves the festival. As Leslie assures the reporters there is no curse, the power generator blows out, leaving the festival dark and stranding most of the Parks Department on a Ferris wheel. Using the blackout as an excuse, Anne takes Donna's advice to make out with Kylie, Joey Russo, her dumb but attractive patient.
I leave for 1 second and look what goes on.
I mean, by the way, like, you got to, God bless Joey Russo, some questionable choice decision-making, some questionable decision-making from Anne here. Like, this character, I don't know, made me laugh. Like, I don't know what we're doing with this character. He's like a Jersey Shore guy? Is that what's going on? Do you remember this, Greg, writing this character?
I remember very vividly all of us in the writers room watching the casting videos and the debate yes. being what type of a guy it should be, right? And some people really loved this yes. voice and this take.
Yes.
And some people were like, this isn't someone we naturally find in Pawnee.
Yes.
So maybe that didn't matter because it was more about who's the type of guy that would
it.
Both
yeah.
be someone Anne would never want to see again, but also want to hook up with. And so much time was spent thinking about the nuance
yeah.
of who this random hookup should be.
I think the wrong choice was made. This took me out of the episode a little. Rob, what did you think? What did you think of this guy? He's like a New York guy or something.
I got yes, totally. Yes. I'd say I was totally taken out of the episode by that character. I was.
Why is he talking like that? That's what is he doing? Just cast like a normal corn fed like football player type guy or something who's like dumb or something. I mean, like just someone who would be in this guy. Where do we find this actor? I'm sorry to this actor. You're just trying to work. I get it, but it was more of a writing casting choice. But I remember arguing. We watched the tapes. We're like, no, don't cast this guy. And then he got cast anyway.
Well, he does the role well, but in a very unexpected way. I sometimes have found now I like to look up where these actors we've cast, what else they've done. I'm just curious. And he's in Jersey Boys, the movie. And of course he's yes. in Jersey Boys, the movie.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Is he in Pawnee, Indiana? I don't know.
That's what it was remembering. I was remembering the sense memory of arguing about this character who I guess is named Kylie, who is a hot but attractive patient, a hot but dumb patient, I guess. But anyway, the rare Donna Ann C story, which is, I love that, which is like Donna giving Ann dating advice. Yeah, this was a fun episode. Like we mentioned earlier about Purd, Shauna, and Joan, they end up being really important to the show because ultimately we recalibrated the show so that there was less internal conflict. Although, of course, there's conflict between our characters, but there's often like they're a team against the rest of the world. So to do that, I think you need external conflict. You need external antagonists, and the media was natural. Like there's in Harvest Festival, they're kind of the antagonist, not just in this episode, but also in the Media Blitz episode, right? So it's like there's just so it's just useful to have these characters put the screws on and sort of tighten the vise on our gang.
Well, and also because those two characters are also, as you say, I love the hard comedy. I love
yes.
it. And you know, I prefer it even over story. And those actors and those characters are killer. What is Purd saying this? This reporter's statement is a question or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, just again, maybe the most fun character to write for. Like Purd was just like, it's every line is a joke. And it just, every line makes me laugh. It's just hilarious delivery. And shout out to Joan as well. Like Joan is like, okay, as time went on, we just made her a more and more like just a mess, just a walking mess. At a certain point, Tom Haverford walks up to her, Joan, you look great. Did you get your breast done? She's like, thank you for noticing. Yes. It's like, this is insane. This is just an insane couplet of dialogue. Like, what is happening in the show?
You know, something else I think we should talk about just briefly, I'm curious to get both your takes, is this moment where Ben believes he's the curse and he decides to leave. It's such an interesting choice, I think, because we've spent so much time with Ben being this visitor from outside helping. But this felt almost like, you know, something that someone who's worked with them forever and feels like he's at home here. He's so invested in the Harvest Festival at this point. So, you know what I mean? Didn't it feel a bit like he's one of us. He's one of the community now.
Well, here's what I thought is, as a true outsider, as someone who's not in the episode and who hadn't seen it until about 2 hours ago, I thought that Ben's thinking he was the curse and leaving was just an homage to the Nutmeg of Consolation by Patrick O'Brien, which was later made into the movie Master and Commander, because in Master and Commander, there is that famous sequence where there's the Jinx that puts them in the doldrums, and the Jinx grabs a cannonball in one of the most disturbing scenes in movies and commits suicide by jumping over the ship holding a cannonball plummeting to the depths. See, I felt this was just an elaborate nod to that.
Wow, when's the last time you watched Master and Commander? That's an incredible recall of that movie. I could have watched that this morning and not remembered that.
I'm telling you, I'm a big Master and Commander guy.
I mean, secretly, it turns out it's not just your uncle's favorite show. It's your favorite movie. Like,
but I wouldn't have watched it if he was just the master. The fact that he's the master and the commander, I was like, well, this guy's, I'm going to see Russell Crowe in this.
That really seals the deal. It's an amazing, amazing title. By the way, Nutmeg, a Consolation, also an amazing title.
When
I started reading, I thought it was a joke that we had written because it's so funny. Nutmeg, a Consolation.
Also, we've talked about these Ray Donovan movies, these Ray Donovans. So Master and Commander was nominated for 10 Oscars. I think it's worth calling out.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. Like, it's a pretty broad category at this point because Ford v. Ferrari also nominated for like a shit ton of Oscars.
I'm sorry. I have the ignominious honor of losing an award to someone on fucking Ray Donovan. So let's just fucking get real, guys. I lost the Golden Globe to John Voight. For Ray Donovan. So
John
awards don't mean, you know, awards don't inoculate you being in the Ray Donovan silo.
Absolutely. You're absolutely. By the way, and John Voight, what is, so he's Ray Donovan's dad, right?
Dad.
Can we get it? What's his character's name? Now we're just into Ray Donovan minutia. But I just want to know what his name is because I just want to know his character's name. Oh, man, we got
Donovan.
Mickey Donovan. Okay.
Of course Mickey Donovan.
Okay, let's get back to the synopsis. On the Ferris wheel, with April and Andy arguing below him and Tom and Jerry arguing above him, an annoyed Ron clears the air by announcing the obvious. April is mad at Andy for not telling her that he loves her back. And the missing little Sebastian is Tom's fault. Andy tells April that he clearly loves her and they hug and Tom apologizes to Jerry. Later, everyone spots little Sebastian in the corn maze and they recover him. Leslie learns the power outage was due to television crews plugging into the grid and overloading it. The only replacement generator in Pawnee is at the Wamapoke Casino, and Leslie humbly asks Ken to loan it to her in exchange for placing a Wamapoke cultural exhibit near the Harvest Festival entrance. Ken agrees, and during the festival opening the next morning, he performs a meaningless ceremony to remove the fake curse. Wow. A lot of plot, and it's like, it all ties together. It's all tying together.
And it's funny. Funny.
And Jonathan Joss, very funny actor. Very funny actor in this show.
Really funny in this.
He did
super,
a great job.
Super funny.
I love his voice. His voice is great.
And his vest is great. He's wearing a wonderful, wonderful vest.
Shout out to our costume department, Kirsten Mann, still working with her, doing my new show. Great, great costume designer. Producer note. This episode's a perfect example of punching up. It could have been all the murals and the town used to be bad, but we do see the town actively working to better itself. That's true. That's actually true. It's still had a long way to go with the help of Leslie. There's just a couple Andy jokes that I wanted to shout out that I really enjoyed. He's playing the carnival game where he's throwing like a ring toss game where he's throwing rings, I think, and he keeps messing up and he's like, it's almost like they don't want you to win. Which I thought was very funny. And then he's in the corn maze and he says, this maze is like a maze. It's like just crazy jokes. I mean, like, these jokes are funny. And also, Pratt, very funny delivering them. Very, very funny. Oh, wow. Someone's typing in the Google Doc right now. This maze is like a maze. And they added an I to the first maze.
Oh, boy.
Schulte making a little pun. I love the real-time wordplay happening.
Yeah.
And by the way, this Pert Hapley joke is also in the notes. Pert Hapley says, yes, the statement that this reporter has is a question.
God, it's so good.
So there you go. There you go. By the way, the exterior shot of the casino says Rachel Ray, which is a callback to, I'm unclear what she's doing. Is she doing a cooking demonstration? Is she doing a concert? Like, what's Rachel Ray doing there? Signing a book?
She's gambling.
Yeah, I guess she's just in there gambling.
You know, I remember Dan Gore talking about being really impressed with this, in general with Dean Holland as a director, but this choice and the way lighting and directing, everything came together, that moment where they spot little Sebastian in the maze, right? The way that the light is kind of like shimmering off of that horse jacket, which we don't actually, I think, know the actual term for still.
Yes,
the horse jacket. Horse jacket that he almost like gets lit up like this angelic thing in the middle of the maze, like furthering the lore of the greatness of Little Sebastian. Such a smart directing choice that maybe can go unnoticed, but I think was wonderful.
Yeah, and shout out to Dean too, because he had, like, you know, we had him as a guest, listen to his episode of this podcast as well, but his first episode obviously was I think Sweetums the year before. I think it was episode 10 or something, that season 2, which was an episode that I had the writing credit on and was on set with him with. And by this time he had already become a pretty confident, solid director, and he would become the most frequent director of the show. I think this episode was a big reason why, because it came out so well, and him and Dan were a great team, because Dan ended up being, he wasn't quite yet the number 2 on the show, I think, at this point, but maybe close to it, and he ended up being kind of the second command for a while on Parks. So a really good team, and Dean killed this episode visually.
Dean was, it's great. We were blessed to have really good directors. We never had a bad director, and that's so rare on television.
Yeah,
and we did so many episodes. Every director was wonderful, but Dean was my favorite. I think Dean was the best director we had throughout. He was amazing.
And part of that is because he just has this deep understanding of the show. That's something like I kind of learned after, you know, directing for a while. It's like part of your job, you know, there's all this stuff you can do with directing actors, blocking and your lenses and all lighting, all this shit. But like really, you need a deep, deep, deep within your bones understanding of the story, understanding of the characters, understanding what the show is and what the sort of vision of the show is. And because Dean was an editor and he had literally seen more footage of the show than any human being on earth, right? So it's like he understands what worked in the show. He understands the pieces that he needed. He understands how it comes together in post, because he ran the post department. Like he watched the show with Mike more than anybody. And so, you know, he ended up, and also, like, you know, he's a good communicator. So he ended up being a great director for it. So shout out to Dean on this one.
You know, Dean also worked at The Office, right, with Greg and Mike before.
Yes, that's right.
He just knew this style of comedy and storytelling so well. And I looked it up, his credits, he will have gone on to direct 27 episodes of Parks and Rec. he directed 1/5 or more of all Parks episodes. It's incredible.
It's staggering. It's staggering. And he's gone on to do a lot of other great stuff. So shout out to Dean. I think he was Parks the first thing he directed? He might have done one episode of The Office or something. Anyway, we'll fact check that later. People begin to swarm into the festival to wrap this synopsis up, and Leslie cheerfully greets them. Ben returns to apologize to Leslie for leaving, admitting that he's not over his past yet. She reassures him the festival is as much his accomplishment as hers, and even has Ken break Ben's curse, although Ken's gesture is also completely meaningless. Just a joke. At the end, Ben appears to have been won over by Lil Sebastian, but then admits to the camera crew that he still fails to see the appeal and remains as baffled as ever. Really cute ending. Very cute ending.
I also, speaking of direction, Parks and Rec is a lot of things. Wonderful, wonderful things, of which we have based a podcast on. But one of the things it is not is a show of tremendous scope and scale. And I almost fell out of my chair when I saw a drone shot, overhead helicopter shot of the entire, you know, the festival and the city and the sunset, and it was glorious and beautiful. I'm like, wait a minute, what show am I watching here?
You're absolutely right, because we would joke a lot, for those of you who know a little bit about shooting the show, like, there's no dollies, there's no Steadicam, there's no, you know, people would never be laying down track to put a dolly on, to put a camera to move it, like, and so to suddenly go from that, it's 100% handheld, like super easy to light, super, you know, wide open apertures, and it's sort of like the irises or, you know, whatever, you get it. And then at the end of this episode, couple things, not just that drone shot, the show basically never uses music. It almost never uses either non-diegetic, sometimes diegetic music, which is music that's in the story of the show. But this is an actual song that is played over the end of this episode. Mike agonized over this, and he asked the writing staff a few times, like, should he use the music at the end? And he ended up using it. It's kind of cool. It's American Girl by Tom Petty. But it's like that paired with a drone shot, it's crazy. It's like, it's one of the craziest things. And Mike said, at the time, it was the most expensive shot of the entire series. because it was both that drone, and I think this was a real helicopter. I'm not sure if it was two drone shots or a drone and then a helicopter. I couldn't tell. But then there's also a ton of VFX. Because they put in a roller coaster and like a Sweetums tent. You know, it's not the most expensive VFX in the world if you watch a shot now, 10 years later. But there's still some shots in like an NBC sitcom. So there's still some VFX shots, which is like, that's really tough to do, by the way, on this kind of schedule and on this kind of budget. It's tough to do that. Having dealt a little bit with VFX now, it's tough to do. But yeah, it was worth it. And did Tom you enjoy the shot? Did you think it was good?
I loved it. And Tom Petty ain't cheap either.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I will say this. The music budget for Parks and Rec must have been vanishingly small. So maybe they amortized that song over the course of 125 episodes.
That's right.
Never used any other songs. So that's very funny. Because, so, you know, to pay to use a song, you have to pay the publishing and the songwriters and everyone. It's extremely expensive.
I promise you that song was between $50,000 and $75,000.
If not more. Yeah, if not maybe more. We're doing a lot of music clearances now. We had someone quote us $200,000 for a song. Mm. We didn't use it, but yeah. I mean,
I'm told here that the Drew Carey Show isn't streaming because of the music in it.
That's wild. I mean, that makes sense. You have to pay for, they call it like in perpetuity, and they call it like, you know, different, you pay for different levels of rights, you know? So sometimes, I believe this happened with Freaks and Geeks, they had to go in meticulously and replace some of the songs that they couldn't clear for, you know, streaming or DVD or whatever. But it's a pain, man. It's like you really fall in love. We're doing a lot of music on the new show I'm working on. It's a ton of music. It's all like late 90s, early 2000s hip hop. So it's like, you know, Biggie and Diddy mm-hmm. and Mace and Lil' Kim. And it's like, it's great. I'm really happy, but it's also just impossible to clear because it's like, you know what? Like this Diddy song has a David Bowie sample. It's like, can you get David Bowie's estate to clear? Like, this is insane. This is like, this is just, it's a quagmire.
It's crazy to watch some shows on streaming now. And like, I think of Dawson's Creek that has that amazing cut to like the Paula Cole song. Like, I don't want to wait.
And I just think re-record?
It's a new song. And so you're like ready for that moment. Like I like injected into my veins kind of a thing. And it's just this like lovely little thing. This is not the show I know. What are you? I want to also just point out something about that overhead shot, which I think is worth talking about, which is that we rarely, because it's a mockumentary, get to see Pawnee from this vantage point. And besides it being fun to see the enormous like version of this harvest festival, but it kind of reminded me that, oh, this is like a city, right? Where people need to find activities on the weekends and where people live and work, and you get to see streets around it as opposed to this more myopic view of like the library or right, a park. And I think it was nice. It kind of reminded me again of like what we talked about in the room of Pawnee being like this live action version of Springfield, right? That everything exists together. And of course, Sweetums is sponsoring something. So to me, it had this lovely encapsulation of the Pawnee we've come to know for the last few years.
I also like that it proves that old thing is that rules are meant to be broken.
Yeah.
And because there's a world where we just talked about it, Alan, where Mike agonized. He's like, we're not that show that ends every show with a needle drop pop hit. That's not what we do. Should we do it? You did it. It's great. He's like, we don't do overhead drone shots because it's not the point of view of a mockumentary. What are the mockumentary guys up in the helicopter? No. Okay. So how are you getting that? You broke a rule of making the show, and it's great. Nobody cares. It's awesome.
Yeah. And I feel like one of the things that contributed to that was I think they were rightfully proud of having gotten to this point. You know, the show built and built and built and got better and better and added new and improved cast members and all this stuff. And this felt like a huge achievement, I think, for us. I think it felt like, you know, wow, we kind of got over the hump and figured out what the show was. And it's clicking. It's fun. It's like all of these actors are amazing. It's, you know, it's just really firing in all cylinders. And like, yeah, let's do a little helicopter shot and take a victory lap. Glory for a second. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, go on with the rest of the season. And
you know, keep in mind. Do you know where else they take victory laps?
Where?
Ford v. Ferrari.
Ford v. Ferrari. I mean, that's, it's really Ford v. Ferrari. We should do a whole episode on Ford v. I actually have some thoughts on Ford v. Ferrari. It's good. I just have some thoughts on it, but yeah, it's good. I'm glad that you watched it fresh.
Yeah, I did.
How about that?
Yes.
All right. Let's go to the oops moment. Okay, so I mentioned this casually earlier. I'm kind of curious about the origin of this. Ken Otate originally said that white people like Matchbox 20, but later in reruns, it got changed to Rachel Ray. Why did we do that? Why did that happen? Just for fun? Did Matchbox 20 sue us?
Yeah,
did Rob Thomas from Smooth sue us?
They're both great jokes, but I'm curious why they changed, because they're both hilarious jokes.
It seems like we don't know why. It seems like it just got changed.
Did you not have the right? It's the music streaming thing. It's like, not only can you not use Matchbox 20's music, you clearly can't say their names.
You can't even say Matchbox 20? Did Mike strike up a friendship with Rob Thomas, the guys from that show or that band? You didn't want to offend them? Anyway, I guess.
I'm looking at the script right now, and the script we shot said that they love Rachel Ray. And the Trevor curses. I wonder if there was an alt, so there's a version, and in some version it had I am a bit mystified by this oops as well, I have to tell
you. This may be a false memory, but I feel like I've seen the marquee say Matchbox 20 at the end. Like, I literally feel like I watched a version of this episode where it said Matchbox 20. Let's write in. I don't know if this is a Berenstain Bears moment. I guess there's no way to really know, because it's all the versions now will be Rachel Ray. So. Unless someone has a VHS recording from 2012 or whenever this aired, 2011.
It's on my, what is it? What was the original DVR thing?
TiVo.
TiVo.
TiVo. Yes. I love the noises that TiVo would make. Blip, blip,
blip. That was one of the first sound effects in the room.
So satisfying. Yeah.
Wasn't it satisfying? Wasn't it?
Like, I would love to just, I would love to add that to
my
TV.
We literally said it was like that phrase that, like, yeah, I'm going to TiVo it. It was a thing.
Now, do you think the owners of TiVo, like,
kicked themselves?
Got to sell? Well, or did they sell, do you think? Or did they get acquired and make some money? Or did they just get booted out of the business?
Or are they just the other version of BlackBerry, who had the world at their feet and then just fiddled while Rome burned?
You know what I like to record on my TiVo? Ray Donovan.
Okay. Yes!
Okay. Episode MVP. Most valuable Pawnean. Which character moment sticks out at you?
This isn't even a conversation.
One, two, three. Little Sebastian. Little Sebastian. If you say anything else, you're not a true Pawnean. You're not a real fan.
That's right.
You're not anyone else. But if you want to let us know another MVP or a different MVP for a different episode, tweet us at Team Coco Podcast or by using the hashtag Parks and Recollection. So, you know, we all know the real MVP of this episode. You can give us the runner-up. Like, why don't we do that? The runner-up for this episode. Runner-up MVP for Harvest Festival. Because we all know the winner is Little Sebastian, the most adorable horse in the world. Shall we do the town hall?
Let's do it.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics, because that's who we are.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Do you want to go to the town hall? I think you do.
I think we do the town hall from the Sweetums tent at the Harvest Festival, where we're doing it.
I know, it's a little hot in that tent. The ventilation is not good.
Maybe we do it in the corn maze where Jerry's eating corn to stay away, stay alive.
Yes.
Okay, let's do it in the corn maze. Hopefully we can make our way out after we answer this question.
Yeah.
From Matt from Australia, all the way down under.
I love it.
I'll spare you my Australian accent. This is literally my favorite pod, he says. And favorite is spelled FAVOURITE. So he's really not lying about being Australian.
Well, there's another dead giveaway coming up. Keep reading.
my question. Since the show was left the telly,
bingo.
Okay, now I feel like you're pushing too hard. Maybe you're not Australian. Yeah. Matt from Australia asks, since the show has left the telly, are there any real-world inspired story beats you'd love to explore if the show was still running? Mm. Second question. I think something Pokemon Go inspired would be fun.
Oh,
would
yeah.
Chris play Pokemon? The parks here were flooded with peeps during that time. I love this question.
Would Chris play Pokemon Go?
Pokemon Go?
Are you kidding? He'd be in a league.
Yeah. Pokemon Go.
I would love to see you on Wednesday, but that is the night I meet with my Pokemon Go league.
I have to hatch another egg. I have one that's 50 kilometers. I just
hatched an egg.
I just hatched an egg. It's a Clefairy. He's like another Jigglypuff.
It's just
a quick story about Pokemon Go. So Pokemon Go was a phenomenon how many years ago? Like that's
5 to 7?
Yeah, it's got to be like 5 years ago, right? I mean, yeah. It's got to be at least. So I actually did play for a little bit. I love walking around, right? So I love, you know, just getting my steps in. Got to get, you know, 6-7 miles a day, right? You want to get, okay, since 2016, so 6 years ago. So I played Pokemon Go for a while. I feel like it was a fad that went around. People played for like a month. Like I played for like a month. My sister still playing Pokemon Go. So when we go anywhere, I see her take out her phone. She has kids. She's like a grown woman. She's a lawyer, very successful person. Just like taking out her phone, playing Pokemon Go. So you know she's like got so many Pokemon. And the other thing is my friend's husband still plays. So like there's still like a secret society of some Pokemon Go people still going. And they're just still like she's traveling. She's like, I'm in Bora Bora. There's some interesting Pokemon. You're like, there's Pokemon in Bora Bora or wherever they are. Like, it's very funny to me that they're playing. I think Pokemon Go is a good idea. I think we feel lucky in a way that some of this stuff got avoided. But like, you know, I feel like there's a lot of social media bits. I know we did near the end of our run, we did some tweets. I think Tom had a Twitter story, but I think that's like very ripe for, and then, I don't know. I think things got a little dark in America. So I feel like maybe it's good. Like, I don't honestly really want to do like election or pandemic stories. So maybe it's good we got out while we did. Pokemon Go, though, is a good answer. That's very nice and light. It's very cheerful.
And Chris would love it. He would love it.
Dude, he would be the world champion. He would have one from every fucking
running.
Continent.
Well, just think how fast he'd run around.
Exactly. Just hatching eggs like a motherfucker. I love it.
I'm busy hatching eggs.
All right. I love it. Thank you, Matt from Australia. We are departing the town hall. Any other last comments, Rob?
I just want to thank everybody for listening, as always. And don't forget to subscribe. Yeah, that's very important. You want to get everything here. You know, there's a lot of good stuff to come. So wherever you get your podcast and 5-star reviews on Apple. And as always, thanks to Schulte and Greg, another great episode. And I'm going to go play Pokemon Go. That's what I'm going to go do right now. I've been inspired.
I love it. Goodbye from Pawnee.
See you next week.
Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.